Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now for our month of May check-in with BL Trees, our year-long, once-a-month project to follow the life of a tree through the four seasons and the 12 months, looking at and learning about the trees around us, what they do for and to us, and what we do for and to them. New York City has millions of trees. We hope you pick one out to follow this year. Maybe even tweeted us a photo using the hashtag BLTrees, as we're inviting you to do once a month as you follow your tree through the year anywhere in our listening area. Today we're going to talk about birds and trees. It's the spring migration season. Birding Twitter is full of tweeting birds, photos at least, of the many birds passing through town on their way back north and stopping off to hang out in the trees around the area. Turns out the relationship between bird and tree is more involved than just a branch to nest on. So let's learn how and why. Back with us is our guide for this year-long adventure, urban ecologist Marielle Anzalone, founder of New York City Wildflower Week, who proposed this project and is offering her expertise in putting it together month by month. Hello again, Marielle.
Hi, Brian. It's good to be back.
And today she is joined by Desiree Narango, a conservation scientist at the University of Massachusetts and working in collaboration with the U.S. Forest Service, researching this link between tree and bird conservation. Welcome to WNYC, Desiree. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So, Marielle, we invite everybody to pick their tree to follow this year, one outside their window or in their backyard or a tree that's on their block or caught their attention just walking around their neighborhood and get to know it. And then remind us, do what?
Yes, and then we want people to share what they find, to post their photos on Twitter using the hashtag BLTrees. And we formed a little community of people who are really interested to see how people's trees are doing. It's been about 6 months so far, so we've seen a lot going on with our trees lately.
Remind everybody what your tree is and how it's doing this May.
Yes, my tree is a pin oak, which is a tree that's native to New York City. It typically grows in wild areas, but mine is planted on a corner in Kensington in Brooklyn. It's near where I live. And oaks are, so since it's an oak, oaks are a little slow to leaf out. So other trees were flowering, had these big, beautiful flowers, and they're still waiting. But oaks are interesting because they are wind pollinated. The flowers are very small. And I posted a picture of what some of the male flowers look like. They dangle, they hold pollen, and they fall on the ground and get kind of caught up in like cigarette butts and other things. But those are flowers and floral parts. And of course, the female flowers stay on the tree and eventually become acorns.
And I think a lot of people don't think about flowers having gender. So that's a good lesson right there. Some new way to look at some of our trees. And Desiree, the early bird might get the worm, but what it really wants is the caterpillar. And caterpillars are picky when it comes to which trees they live on, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, we see across lots of songbirds that even among all the insects that they especially prefer to eat those delicious caterpillars, which are the larvae that turn into butterflies and moths. But the caterpillars are plant eaters and they're very picky and very specialized to use particular host plants. And so they are evolved to use mostly native plants. And so we need to have those native plants to support the caterpillars so that the birds can find them so they can eat and feed their young.
And when we plant non-native species of trees, we don't bring their ecosystems with them. So we might like the way the tree looks and it might grow here, but it's not necessarily fully participating, as it were, because it's not always providing the same amount of food for the birds in the area.
Exactly. Our native insects have adapted to the chemical compounds that are found in tree leaves. They also have adapted to the timing of the leaves, like Marielle said, about the timing of when a tree leaves out. And they've adapted to how they look as well. And so it turns out that when we introduce these non-native trees from other ecosystems across the world, that our native insects don't recognize them. So they don't use them. And so they're not providing the food for the birds to eat. And so the birds aren't really using them to find food as well.
Question that a lot of our listeners have probably never thought about. How many caterpillars does it take? Sounds like the beginning of a joke. How many caterpillars does it take to support a bird or a bird family?
Oh, takes a lot of caterpillars. So, for example, for the chickadee, which is a bird that I studied for a research project of mine, when they're feeding their baby birds in the nest, they need from 6,000 to 9,000 individual caterpillars just to feed one nest of baby chickadees. And so that's just a little bird that weighs 10 grams. It's about 10 paper clips in your hand. So if we think about bigger birds like cardinals or woodpeckers, it's taking thousands and thousands of caterpillars to allow those birds to breed and to thrive. And even on top of that, these birds really need these insects very quickly, and these caterpillars especially very quickly when they're making these grand migratory movements as well. So the birds are really doing a great job at taking care of those caterpillars and keeping our plants healthy too.
All right, listeners, who has a story or a question about the relationship between birds and trees? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or you can tweet your question about birds and trees at Brian Lehrer. For Marielle Anzalone, founder of New York City Wildflower Week, who proposed this once a month following a tree through the year series that we're doing that started in November. We're doing the May episode right now, and joined today by Desiree Narango, conservation scientist at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, working in collaboration with the U.S. Forest Service, researching this link between trees and bird conservation, and Lisa in Forest Hills, who are on WNYC. Hi, Lisa.
Paul, I love your show.
Thank you. Now we have you, Lisa. Hi there. Now we have you. Hi.
Oh, sorry. Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I really love your show. So this story is more about a bird than a tree. This week, I noticed this pile of like old branches, old leaves, even little pieces of plastic on the back of my air conditioner. And I thought, oh, is some bird like collecting things to make a nest? And I was worried they would make a nest on the back of my air conditioner, and then when I have to start using it, that would be really bad for the nest. So I swept everything off the back of my air conditioner. Within like 12 hours, the whole pile was back. And then I started noticing, I think it was a mourning dove, was coming and picking little things individually and flying away with them. It was as if this bird was using the back of my air conditioner as a loading dock for their nest building project. I have a video of it. It's the cutest thing. This bird must have been back like 20 times picking, like you could see it was like deciding, do I want to take the plastic or the leaf? Or it was the cutest thing.
What a great story. And the air conditioner as a loading dock. Lisa, thank you for sharing that. Mary on Staten Island, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. I had a non-bird question, I'm afraid.
That's okay. It is a tree question, right?
It is. It's a tree question. Recently, the trees on Staten Island are starting to drop these golden threads, sort of thicker threads, but not as thick as a rope. I don't know which tree does this. I don't know what the little threads do, if they're some kind of seed or what have you. Because of the recent weather, they kind of clumped up on the street. They got rained on, and then the wind dried them into great big bundles, and it looks like sort of sidewalk seaweed. Can someone tell me what tree this is and whether it's like really something you'd be allergic to or what
Marielle,
is going on.
Marielle, is this ringing a bell?
Yes, it's ringing a bell. It's exactly what I was talking about earlier. These are the male flowers from oak trees. Oaks are just starting to finish up releasing their pollen, and flowers are all different trees, you know, different kinds of plants all have different flower structures. And for oaks, the male and the female flower parts are in different flowers entirely, as opposed to being in the same flower as you might find in like a rose or other things. So the males are only useful for pollen once they, and they dangle from the tree and you don't see it. So they're very hidden behind, you know, as the leaves are emerging, you kind of see it, but we don't recognize them also as flowers because they don't have the sterile parts like the petals that are beautiful and big and are attractants to like bees. Here I am, come pollinate me. Because oaks are wind pollinated, petals, in fact, would be an obstacle to wind pollination because you're blocking the places where the pollen needs to go. So, yeah, those are the male flowers of oak trees. They're dropping now, and it's just, as you say, they kind of collect on the ground, and they almost look a little bit like urban tumbleweed. And so they're not, you can touch it. It won't bother you, but they do have pollen, and the pollen in oaks is one of the things that causes spring allergies. So wind pollinated plants are sticky and airborne, and they stick to your eyes, they stick inside your nasal passage, and that's what causes allergies. It's not plants that we would recognize as being a flower. Those don't cause the allergy. It's the windborne grasses and oaks, among others.
Mary, there you go. Thanks for asking a great question. Kevin in Belmar, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning. Question is, how delicate is the balance between the caterpillars that are basically destructors of foliage and the butterflies that then become the pollinators, and how unique is that relationship in nature?
Desiree, can you take that one?
Sure. So across all of the caterpillars that turn into butterflies and moths, we know that more than 90% of them are plant specialists. So just like the monarch butterfly feeds exclusively on milkweed, all of those butterflies and moths, or almost all of them, are feeding on just a handful of different plants. So it's a very delicate balance. If you don't have those plants, those caterpillars won't be there, and then they won't grow up to become those butterflies and moths. And we also know that there are some trees and shrubs that do the lion's share of supporting most of that diversity. So for example, those oak trees that are dropping those flowers all over the neighborhoods, they are supporting over at least 526 different species of butterflies and moths in the state of New York. And so that compares to a different tree like a tulip tree or a black gum that's only supporting about a dozen or so. So some of these trees are really, really important to have in our ecosystems, in our neighborhoods, so that we can support most of that diversity.
Raj and Edison, you're on WNYC. Hi, Raj.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me. I have a quick question. My wife noticed that birds that look like robins always come back to the same little tree in our backyard and seem to build a nest each time new in spring. And then, of course, in winter, everything goes away. And then again, next spring, we see similar kinds of birds. And the question we have is it the exact same birds that come back to the same tree, or is it just, you know, different birds that might all be robins?
Oh, that's a great question. So it could be the exact same bird. So for some of the birds that I studied for my research, we actually put little bands on their legs so that we can identify individuals. And I had chickadees that came back to the exact same nest box for 5 years in a row, which is really exciting.
How do you
I have
even
a robin
know?
On my back porch that nests on the same trellis every single year. So it could definitely be the same birds.
How long do they live?
It depends on the species. The small birds will live, you know, 2 to 5 years or so. But the bigger birds like cardinals and robins, some birds have been recorded to live 12 or more years.
Hmm. And how do you know it's the same individual bird without having tagged it or something?
unfortunately, you can't unless they have some sort of unique behavior or a unique mark on their plumage. But otherwise, you would just, it's going to look like every other bird that's out there.
Brian in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you? Love the show. This is the first time I've ever called because this is a subject it's close to my heart. I feed my birds a lot, and they seem to know that I feed them a lot. And clearly the same chickadee, cardinals, pair of cardinals, 10 mourning doves, they all come back. But my question is really, is it okay to feed them that much? Because they seem to be like, hey, Brian, you know, you haven't fed us like in a day or two. Where's that food? You know, and it's a constant thing. About a $30 a month investment. They're always like in my backyard. I love it, and I see the same chickadees year after year. So that's my question.
Great question, and I bet a lot of people wonder about that, Desiree. Should they feed the birds? Is a bird feeder good or bad or neutral for birds, or humans feeding the birds in our midst in any other way?
Yeah, that's a great question. So if you have a feeder in your yard that you're keeping clean and free of disease, and you're keeping your cats inside so that they're not preying on the birds, then that feeder is a really good thing. For you, especially, because now it's bringing the birds closer to you so that you can see them and appreciate them. But in terms of survival and reproduction, those bird feeders aren't bad, but they're not necessarily good either. The birds don't need them in order to survive. They're mostly eating insects, especially right now during the breeding period. Most of our birds are relying exclusively on insects and just coming to your feeder occasionally to get some of that seed. So the best thing that you can do is plant native plants around your yard so that you can provide lots of insect food for the birds to eat and to feed their young. And then you can also keep that feeder nearby too, so you can see who's visiting as well.
You know, there's a 2019 study that found there were 3 billion fewer birds in the U.S. and Canada than in 1970. 3 billion fewer. Desiree, where'd all the birds go? Do we know?
Yeah, so unfortunately, we lost them. We lost them because of lots of disturbance that we have affected our ecosystems with, especially in terms of habitat loss and climate change, invasive species. We have lost lots of those individual birds, and we have much fewer numbers than we used to have. And so it's a really unfortunate and depressing number, but I want to emphasize that there's really something that we can do. So in terms of habitat loss, planting trees in these areas where we've taken away all the green space can be a really great opportunity to start to bring those birds back by providing the habitat that they need to survive.
And in our last 30 seconds or so, Marielle, to the thought from earlier in the segment, choosing a native tree like a red maple, an oak, certain kinds of elm trees, sweet gum. Choosing a native tree when planting new ones makes a difference?
It does. It makes a really big difference. And also, you know, some of Desiree's research shows a lot of birds will nest in a tree and not forage very far. So if they don't have native trees within their foraging range, they won't find enough of the caterpillars that they need to feed their young in order to fledge the nest and survive. So yeah, having lots of native trees everywhere is really critical.
Marielle Anzalone, founder of New York City Wildflower Week, who proposed this project of picking out a tree and following it once a month on the show for a year. We started in November, so we're halfway through. Thank you so much, as always. And Desiree Narango, who joined us for this month's May edition of #BLTrees, a conservation scientist at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Thank you so much, Desiree.
Thanks, Brian. This was really fun.